Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Today's episode is presented by Purple Carrot. Purple Carrot is the plant-based subscription meal kit that makes it easy to cook irresistible meals to fuel your body. Each week, choose from an expansive and delicious menu of dinners, lunches, breakfasts, and snacks. Every box is an opportunity to learn and experience something new with easy recipes and fresh portioned ingredients. No shopping, no food waste, just globally inspired, restaurant-quality, plant-based meals. Get $30 off your first box by going to purplecarrot.com and entering the code PODGO30 at checkout today. That's PODGO30, PODGO30 for $30 off your first Purple Carrot box. Purple Carrot, the easiest way to eat more plants.
This episode is brought to you by the Slash and Cast Podcast Network. Learn more at slashandcast.net.
Welcome to Reverie True Crime. I'm your host, Paige, and today's episode is about baby Peter Connolly and how the system failed this baby so badly. This is a tragic case of child death that needs to be told. If you can't listen to this episode, I completely understand. I think a lot of people tend to avoid cases about babies and children because it is so hard to listen to, but these things happen way too often all around the world, and we do need to talk about it, and we need to hear about it, to bring awareness to these situations, and hopefully, one day, if we work hard enough, I can only hope that things will change. If you're ready, let's get started. On the 1st of March 2006, Peter Connolly was welcomed into this world by a single mother named Tracy Connolly in London, England. In November of 2006, Tracy was with a new man named Stephen Barker. It wasn't long before he moved in with Tracy and baby Peter. So let's go into Tracy's upbringing before we get into this case. Tracy didn't have the best life growing up. In fact, she was born into extremely awful circumstances. Tracy's sex offender father was never around, and she only had her mother, Mary, who was very neglectful towards her daughter. Tracy also had another relative who was coaxed into joining a pedophile ring. It was one of the largest children's home disgraces and scandals of the late 20th century. She was called Tracy the Tramp when she was just a kid because she showed up to her school in tattered and torn, filthy clothes. Her classmates noticed the many men who came in and out of her home, and there were rumors swirling about her mother who smoked pot, and the children were saying she was, quote, a prostitute. Normally, I'd say sex worker, but I'm just saying what the kids were calling her mom at the time. Social services put Tracy in Farney Close, which is a boarding school in West Sussex. The school is for children who deal with social and emotional struggles. She did all right in school. She was remembered as moody and promiscuous. Her mom, Mary, maintains that she kept tabs on Tracy and tried her best to persuade her not to have sex with boys. Mary even knew that she herself could at times go off the rails. Mary said in an interview, quote, "I wasn't an alcoholic or anything, but I liked a good drink when I used to get my money. I'd give Tracy some money to go stay with a friend," end quote. A police officer that was working the case at the time said Mary was basically a, quote, "park bench drunk." When Tracy turned 15, she dropped out of school and worked as a hairdresser for a short time and a barmaid. She met who would become Peter's dad when she was 16, and he was in his 30s. Tracy was pregnant soon after. She and her baby's father moved in together prior to their little girl being born. After the birth of their second baby girl, Tracy was diagnosed and treated for postnatal depression. Not too long after that, she and the father of her children wed at Haringey Civic Center. Tracy claims that she only married him because his mother was putting a lot of pressure on her to do so. There are wedding pictures that show Tracy singing the Sonny and Cher song, "I Got You, Babe," with a vodka and Coke in her hand. A few years following their marriage, they had another daughter. Tracy allegedly got in touch with who she suspects is her biological father, who visited the family often. Even though Tracy's mother claims that she doesn't really know who Tracy's biological father really is. When Tracy was grown, she didn't learn from the mistakes of the people around her when she was growing up. Essentially, she took pieces of the circumstances that she grew up in and, unfortunately, applied them to her life. She and her husband got a divorce while she was pregnant with baby Peter. She kicked him out of the house and was reportedly cheating on him with one of his friends. They resolved things in 2004, and Tracy met a man named Stephen Barker, who I will get into later. But now, she and her husband's marriage was officially over. When baby Peter was born, she neglected him as her mother did to her. She would drink vodka every day, ignoring Peter and watching movies of porn, and constantly having sex with her boyfriend Stephen, whose IQ was 60 and he also came from a very abusive, awful family life. At this time, Stephen was unemployed and he would go do handiwork for extra cash. He couldn't read or write. Tracy claimed that she was so excited when she had Peter. She said that he was the coolest kid and he was the best thing that had ever happened in her life. Tracy said that being a mother was the ultimate happiness in her life. However, that's not what she portrayed in her daily life with Peter. Tracy couldn't even do the easiest, fundamental things that a mother would do for their child. She didn't even protect him at all from what was to come. Her words and her actions do not line up at all. Peter, as mentioned, was born in March of 2006, and in September of the same year, baby Peter was taken to his general practitioner with bruises on him. Though Tracy claimed Peter bruised easily, he was brought into the hospital for checkups multiple times, which afterwards showed even more bruising on his head, chest, sternum, nose, forehead, and right shoulder. Tracy and her mother were arrested in December. Due to the fact that police interrogations couldn't prove that he was in fact assaulted, Tracy and her mom were free to go. Peter was sent home with his mother after 5 weeks of not being in her care in January of 2007. He spent his only Christmas with a family friend who was taking care of him while Tracy was in jail, and her name is Angela Godfrey. Tracy made trips to see a doctor for depression. Once on the 9th of June 2006 and in July, she returned to the same doctor to talk about relationship issues that she had with Peter's biological father. Stephen Barker has a brother named Jason Owen. Jason was in the National Front, and Stephen was infatuated with Nazis. Tracy, Stephen, and Jason lived in Haringey. It's a place that people would often live when they didn't want a lot of attention brought upon them, a place of escape. Stephen and his brother Jason definitely had a lot to run away from. In the beginning, they would steer clear of social services because they had a past of crime, family violence, arson, as well as drug addiction. Stephen had raped a 2-year-old baby girl. He allegedly tortured his grandmother with Jason. Their grandmother, Hilda Barker, was attacked by the two in an attempt to force her to change her will for their own personal gain. This happened in 1995 when Jason and Stephen were said to have locked her in a closet at her small house in Whitstable, Kent, smashing and beating this elderly woman black and blue. They also dressed up in Guy Fawkes masks to completely terrify her. On top of that, Stephen had sexually assaulted many children. At the time of moving into Haringey, Jason was addicted to crack cocaine and convicted of arson. He was also accused of the rape of an 11-year-old girl when he was only 13. That's just a little piece of background on those two. So, after baby Peter was back home with Tracy and her boyfriend, social services checked in over 60 times. Initially, there was one child protective service involved, and they put the case in the hands of another child protective service. Over the course of these visits, they said Tracy seemed like a loving mom doing the best she could. Maria Ward, a highly respected social worker, was appointed to Tracy's home. An incredibly easy background check would have shown that Stephen had been prosecuted by the RSPCA for abusing animals and that he and Jason were investigated because they were suspected to have tortured their grandmother. When Stephen moved in with Tracy, he brought his assortment of Nazi keepsakes, and police who later searched the house found a lot of knives covered with swastikas. As a child, Stephen brutalized guinea pigs, once skinning one alive. He also broke the legs off of a frog. Here is what Maria Ward had to say about visiting Tracy Connolly's house.
She would explain what had gone on, you know, since I'd last visited. I'd speak to the children, I'd speak to the children alone. Peter was a very active child. You knew he was in the room. He would run around, touching things he shouldn't. I'd observed her cuddle Peter. I'd observed Peter go to her, to be comforted by her. Caring for him, you know, changing his nappy, you know, giving him food, you know, the normal.
Tracy's mother, Mary O'Connor, also had things to say about her daughter and Peter.
Tracy, she did love her children. I'll give her that. Because when she was with them sometimes on her own, and she used to make little picnics in the kitchen because they had a big kitchen, and she'd bring them to the park. And yeah, she did love them. But I have to be honest, it's more or less, I'm not blaming this idiot, Stephen Barker, not blaming him, but I am blaming in a way. It's only since he came that she got so engrossed in him that she took her eye off the ball when it comes to the little one.
Baby Peter was in the hospital twice after his first visit. On one occasion, in April of 2007, he was sent to the hospital with bruises, both eyes were blackened, and he had multiple scratches and swelling on the side of his head. In May, a social worker saw Peter and realized he had marks on his face, so the social worker sent Peter to North Middlesex. They find 12 areas of bruising and marks of scratching. The files say that Tracy maintained her story that the injuries were caused by another child who shoved Peter into a fireplace 4 days earlier. It was said that Peter was unsteady on his feet and holding his head to one side. Tracy was arrested again in May of 2007. It's now June, and Stephen's brother Jason moves in with them after he's left his wife, and he also moves in his 15-year-old girlfriend that he left his wife for, along with his own kids. Living in the house as well were three big dogs and a few snakes. All of these professionals involved that were supposed to protect Peter didn't even realize that Stephen and Jason were living in the home. A social worker came to the home to do the routine checkup. However, she didn't see anything amiss because Peter's face and hands were purposefully covered in chocolate and diaper rash cream to conceal the injuries he had suffered. Other reports say that the social worker did in fact see injuries and phoned the police, also saying there was an exam that took place and it was determined that these injuries were due to abuse. Then the report says Peter was handed over to a friend to protect him. So between the 12th and the 26th of June, Peter is in the care of Ann Walker, a childminder. She said she had alerted social services about the child's injuries, but her warnings went ignored. She said, quote, "He was dying. I told them about his state. I said things were not right, but nothing was done. If someone had taken action, we would not be mourning the loss of a baby's life. The warning signs were all there," end quote. On the 25th of July, Haringey Council's Children and Youth People Services were given legal advice. This pointed out the fact that the threshold for initiating care proceedings were not met. In July of 2007, Tracy took Peter to the hospital twice to have him checked for an ear infection and an allergic reaction. In late July, Tracy was completely taken by Stephen. Online, she was saying she was madly in love with the most amazing guy. Also, one of her posts says jokingly, "My fella is nuts." During this time, her own child, at 17 months of age, was being brutally attacked and she was covering up for herself, Stephen, and Jason. Little Peter was looked at by a pediatrician. Regardless of baby P's constant cries of agony, the pediatrician didn't even check Peter over that well because both his back and ribs were broken at the time. The doctor alleged that she couldn't correctly examine Peter because he was so fussy. This would be the last time a professional would get to see Peter alive. Days before Peter would tragically lose his life, he spent the weekend with his biological dad. He obviously noticed right away that Peter's head was shaven, and he was even missing a fingernail. All throughout this time, Peter was seen by so many agencies and professionals, but nothing was done about his injuries. Child Protective Services definitely dropped the ball and failed Peter. There was a lack of communication and working together as a team in the case of Peter Connolly. The police, social services, child protective agencies, doctors, and many other professionals didn't communicate properly with each other, and Peter may still be alive to this day had they done so. The agencies were blaming each other and trying to figure out which Child Protective Service agency got everything wrong. Many of the social workers that took part in Baby Peter's case have since lost their jobs. Tracy was suspected of mistreating Peter and disregarding one of his sisters, and one of Tracy's other little girls was put on the list when Tracy smacked her in a fit of rage, right in front of a shocked school nurse. Relatives depicted another time when Tracy picked up her third daughter by her hair and proceeded to beat her with a hairbrush. Stephen trained Peter like a dog. When Stephen would snap his fingers, Peter would touch his forehead to the floor because he was terrified that he would be punished if he didn't. The social workers and other professionals who stepped inside of the grubby four-bedroom residence, not one of them were up to snuff and didn't prevent the abuse in any way. It was far too late by this point. Either they didn't notice or they ignored the massive stench of urine when they first stepped into the door. The home was infested with fleas. There were rat holes tunneled into the walls, and there was dog poop all over the floor. On one occasion, there was a mutilated rabbit right on the kitchen table. How does this go unnoticed? The professionals didn't even detect or do anything about the lice that were creeping and crawling all over the children's battered skin, which they claim they didn't see the bruising either. On August 2nd, 2007, an ambulance was phoned and Peter was found in his blood-stained crib. He had turned blue and was only wearing a diaper. After efforts of performing CPR, he was taken to North Middlesex Hospital with his mom, Tracy. Peter was declared dead at 12:20 p.m. A post-mortem showed he had ingested a tooth after being punched in the mouth. Baby Peter had a broken back, broken ribs, mutilated fingertips, and fingernails that were missing, possibly ripped out. Overall, there were over 50 injuries inflicted on this baby. Now, if you can't handle the details of what happened, I encourage that you skip ahead about 2 minutes. The injuries to baby Peter included critical slashes of cuts on the top of his head, lacerations to the head either from a human bite or from a dog, broken back, bruising on the left temple and all over his left ear, which his ear was also ripped so much that it was becoming detached from his head. He had slashes on the front of his neck as well as under his chin. There was skin missing from his lips and his tongue. The skin between his upper lip and gums were torn. A front tooth was knocked out, which, as I said before, they later found out that he swallowed it because they found it in his stomach during the autopsy. 3 bruises on his forehead. His right cheek had bruising. His fingernails and toenails that he had left were black. The rest of the nails were ripped out, and the skin around them were torn. There were bruises on his chest and lower back. Missing skin on his nose. He had blood around his spine. His shin bone was fractured. Bruising on the left shin, and a bruise to one of his toes on his left foot. The police sprang into action, starting a murder investigation right away, and Tracy was arrested. Peter, only 17 months old, had been continually choked until he became blue, and the trio even urged one of their Rottweilers to attack him. So the post-mortem inspection did disclose that before the pediatrician visit, Peter had already endured a broken back and fractured ribs. You know, the pediatrician that wouldn't check him because he was just too fussy for her? Yeah. A court ruled that Peter was killed by the hands of his own mother, her boyfriend Stephen Barker, and his brother Jason Owen. When Stephen was sentenced, it was for causing and allowing the death of Peter. In 2008, he was not found guilty for the murder of baby Peter and was only sentenced to 12 years, being told that he would qualify for parole in 3 years. At a later trial in 2009, Stephen was given a life sentence for the rape of the 2-year-old little girl mentioned earlier, with the minimum being 20 years. Tracy was moved from Holloway Prison in London to Low Newton near Durham. That specific jail is a Category A jail which holds high-risk female prisoners. At this time, Tracy was expecting a baby girl by Stephen. She ended up having the little one while she was in the Holloway prison. Social workers in the beginning actually asked permission to leave the baby with Tracy to bond, but thankfully that was overruled. Tracy requested to meet with her other children during her trial, but she was told she will never see them again. She complained to the trial judge that she wept every day and chastised herself for tolerating the abuse inflicted on Peter. But any time she would write to someone from prison, she never mentioned Peter or her other children. What she did write about mostly said, quote, "I've been obsessed lately about it. I need sex like a heroin addict needs a fix," end quote. Tracy and Stephen would ask for new identities and police protection if they were ever released. Tracy's family didn't claim her anymore, and now she was blaming Peter's death all on Stephen. She said she never wants to see his face again, saying, quote, "I hope he rots in hell," end quote. Tracy actually said she was planning a huge party if and when she was free again. In a letter that she had written to a friend, she said, quote, "When I get out, I'm in no rush to get into a relationship with a man again, but I might have fun playing the field and traveling, one long party. I would love to visit Egypt and Greece and Rome. I would love to see the pyramids and go down the Nile. Plus, I hope to move out of London, as this place has been a living hell for me since I was very little," end quote. Sourcing from the Daily Mail, a senior police source said, quote, "They're all on solitary. They don't seem to get it, but it feels like they're the most hated people on the planet," end quote. Peter's grandfather claimed that Stephen had trained 17-month-old Peter to give the Nazi salute and even told him to call him Hitler. The grandfather said, quote, "The little lad would be stuck in his playpen, and whenever his stepdad came into the room, he would call out, 'Hi, Hitler,' and give him the Nazi salute. The poor little lad was desperate to be cuddled and loved. He was crying out to be picked up, but nobody ever did," end quote. So Tracy was released in October of 2013, but a year and a half later, she was again locked up for selling nudes of herself, which violated her bail conditions. She was denied parole on November 27, 2017, and she was given a sentence of at least 2 years. I thought you all may love to know that in 2015, Stephen got attacked by another inmate. This inmate splashed scalding hot water on Stephen's face and arm. The Sun newspaper reported that Stephen, who is serving a life sentence at high-security Wakefield Prison, West Yorkshire, was scarred with a mixture of boiling water and sugar, known in prison circles as napalm. The liquid sticks to the skin and intensifies burns. A spokesman for the Ministry of Justice, who confirmed the prisoner was treated for wounds, said sugar was not used in the attack. A source told The Sun, quote, "To say Barker is disliked is an understatement. He is reviled. The other inmates all hate him with a passion. When Barker came here, everyone knew what he had done to Baby P. Your card is marked if you have a crime against your name concerning kids." After the attack, everyone was in good spirits, knowing someone had hurt Barker. The guy who did it will be getting applauded everywhere he goes now. End quote. Stephen Barker was also refused parole in August 2017. Stephen and Jason's sister Susan said Stephen was a bit backward, and said that he was nervous around Jason, who had been dubbed Fat Boy. Immediately after the toddler's death, Stephen and Jason went to a graveyard near Tracy's house. They were caught on CCTV security cameras. They were lugging a black trash bag. Police claimed that inside of the bag were the baby's blood-stained clothes and bedding. The whole area was examined, but the trash bag has never been discovered. Jason was on bail until midway through the trial when they caught him trying to flee the country. He had been trying to get his name changed and applied for a new passport. Jason was jailed for life for causing Peter's death and was to serve at least 3 years. Jason Owen was released in 2011. However, it wasn't long until he was locked back up in prison for violating his bail conditions. Tracy was refused parole for a third time in December of 2019. As far as what I've read, Jason Owens, as of 2015, now has a new identity and is working as a physical fitness trainer and is obsessed with the gym. According to the Mirror, it states, video has emerged of Owen, now in his early 40s, working out at the gym, lifting heavy weights, and sporting a dark beard. A source even told The Sun, quote, Owen tells people that he is self-employed and is a personal trainer. He is obsessed with the gym and goes virtually every day. It is shocking to think that people are rubbing shoulders with him and maybe even taking advice off him without knowing what he did. End quote. As many as 30 little ones have been murdered in related conditions in the country since Peter, virtually all of them by the hands of a parent or caregiver. A senior child protection officer stated, quote, there is no doubt that purposeful social work was not occurring for baby P. You can't defend the practice. Things were definitely missed. But it's about putting that in the context of an extremely pressurized borough, with difficult politics and overloaded social workers who are not able to evaluate on a regular basis. There is a massive overestimation of what social workers can achieve, given the resources and quality of staff. You have to have basic common sense, be culturally aware, intelligent but streetwise, and strong. Because you have to challenge. You're dealing with the absolute lows and highs of society, child abusers, and consultant pediatricians, so you have to be able to manage both ends of that. End quote. If you know or even suspect a child is being neglected or abused in the United States or Canada, please call the Child Help National Child Abuse Hotline at 1-800-4-A-CHILD, which is 1-800-422-4453. Child Help serves the United States, its territories, and Canada. There is a link in the show notes that will have every country's child abuse hotline. Please call if you even have a gut feeling that you need to, even just a welfare check. We need to stop talking behind closed doors about these things and start acting. The system failed Peter. Every professional you can imagine failed baby Peter. There has to be a change. Always push for change. Do whatever you can to help. You can even go online and find ways to help make a better, safer environment for our children. Babies are dying every day because of abuse, neglect, and downright murder. This has to stop. What will you do to help? Thank you for listening. Please stay safe and hug the children in your life. Let them know that they are loved, and as always, stay healthy. I love all of you.
Victimology, the study of the victims of crime and the psychological effects on them. Join me, Melissa Lee, a criminal justice student, as we discuss various true crime content and victim stories, oftentimes with their loved ones and advocates.
My cousin, Christina Nelson, was a victim of the Lewis Clark Valley serial killer. In my opinion, and this is my opinion, this is probably his first victim. So we're looking at 54 years of him being active.
I can almost 100% assure you that law enforcement would have put it out there already. If they knew who it was and they were able to share it with public, they would tell us.
There was a story on the news about a woman they had found her body and it fit her description.
That doesn't ring true to me, but what I do think here in this specific case, again, it goes back to the conversation you and I had earlier.
It's the minute I walk outside of the prison doors where it like kind of like all hits me. Like it really just, what the hell did I just hear?
What happened?
Like right. It kind of all, you know, sinks in finally.
Victimology is available on all podcast platforms.